So if you're joining us from home, you got an opportunity to have God work in a way that you didn't know, and I didn't know I needed. We had no audio for all of announcements, so Brock's inability to speak did not make it to the stream. God is good. God is good. What I had in my mind to come out of my mouth, the words, the intent, the desire, none of it came out. And if you missed it, since you did, if you're at home, I said that Steve McQueen's daughter had a baby, but Steve McQueen doesn't have a daughter. I was all over the place. His sister did, right? And what I intended to communicate was not what I communicated. The other way that God was good is he gave me a great way to start the sermon. Because what we intend to communicate with our lives, as we look at this passage, may often not be what we actually communicate. What's more, there are communications and ways of doing things that bring about unintended consequences. We've seen one of those this year. We had no idea that we were changing the innate dress code of our church. We don't have a dress code at our church, right? But we changed the dress code at our church by letting people buy sweatshirts from us. I'm not kidding. There are four people with sweatshirts, our church logo sweatshirts, and at least two more with our church t-shirts on. We changed the way that we dress at church, because there are two things. There's church clothes, but now amongst church clothes is included church-sponsored shirts. Nobody else wears a regular other sweatshirt. I mean, maybe every once in a while somebody does, but not typically. But we changed the way we dress by saying, hey, here's a shirt that shows our theme on it. And now people are like, great, I can wear a t-shirt. And I'm showing that I support the church. Nobody will say anything. I mean, one of them was on stage today, right? I think it's great. But we had no idea that's what we were doing. We actually crossed our fingers and hoped that we sold enough shirts to make it so that we could get the cheaper amount or cheaper price on them, and that one time people would wear them to church. And since then, I don't think I've seen a day at church where somebody hasn't had it on. I love it. I really do. I mean, obviously, I'm not wearing a t-shirt or a sweatshirt. That's not really how I dress when I'm preaching. It's how I dress when I'm home. But it's not how I dress when I'm up front. I like to wear clothes like this. Though, I'll be honest, since this happened, they don't all fit me as well anymore. I sat on a couch for 4 months. That changes the metabolism of your body, and now we're trying to work that. That's a different illustration for a different time. But unintended consequences from the things that we do. And sometimes we don't communicate what in our minds we are intending to communicate. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, I don't have love. I'm like a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and I can understand all mysteries and knowledge, but I don't have love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and I surrender my body or deliver it up to be burned, but I don't have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant. It is not rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will cease. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide these three. But the greatest of these is love. Speaking just to our body for a moment, and that meaning ignoring guests who are my family, but speaking to the Algona E-Free body, I know some things about us. We intend to love each other. But we must all ask the question, do we communicate what we intend to? Are we communicating in the way we communicate, in how we communicate? Are we communicating the love that we desire to communicate? Talk about convicting, especially for a personality like mine, one that admits openly, readily, and easily that I'm not nice even. I'm not a nice, inherently nice person. So then, in my mind, when I'm being nice, I'm still not necessarily being nice and not necessarily communicating love. This has been hard to study with any sort of honesty, because when I function in life, I want what I want. But I can't find that in this passage. Love is patient and kind. It always gets what it wants. Love is patient and kind. It figures out how to manipulate people into getting what it thinks is best. It doesn't work that way. That's not what it says. And so then as we step back, we have things to deal with. First of all, answering this question of love. Why is it so important? Right? Start at the beginning. I have a hard time reading this passage because I memorized it in a different version, and I'm now apparently old enough that that's an issue. I memorized it in one version. I try to read it in another version, but not looking always at it, I sometimes give you a Brock version, which is a mixture of those different versions. If I speak in the tongue of men and of angels, but have not love. Okay? So speaking in the tongue of men and of angels, what does that mean? It, in one sense, truly, it is about speaking in tongues as the charismatic gift. How do we know that? Because chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians is nestled right between two of possibly the most difficult to understand and utilize texts of the Bible. Chapters 12 and 14, which was important. I remember I had a conversation with my dad one time, and he told me simply and directly, I don't like poetry, so I don't want to read the poetic parts of the Bible. I said, that's a stupid idea. Because not only did God inspire what was written, he inspired how it was written. So you can't say because I don't like poetry, I'm not reading the Proverbs, I'm not reading the Psalms, I'm not reading the poetic components. Because God inspired it to be written that way. I think he took the chastisement well. About a year later, we started speaking again. Maybe. He says maybe. Oh boy. I just get myself in deeper and deeper, don't I? It's all right. I can handle it. But we see this. We see this talking about chapter 12, talking about chapter 14 as it deals with the charismatic gifts. And specifically, it is saying to love in the midst of them, right? The format that it's written in makes it clear. You've got disagreement about how the charismatic gifts are used here in 12. You've got disagreement about how they're used in 14. And right in the middle of them, in the midst of it, is love. They can love in that moment, right? Did they agree when all was said and done? I think they all agreed with Paul when all was said and done. You know what clear-cut answer Paul gave to them? Whatever clear-cut answer you already thought there was. It's sort of like watching the presidential debates. I realize they're over. But what you see in that is the winner is the guy that you thought was the winner before it started. That's typical. That's the person who won. That's the person who did best. The person you agreed with before you started. So Paul wrote this, gave some very specific things. That is not to say that the use of those gifts is correct within every body of people. There are some specific guidelines given to how those are to be used. And that is a better topic for a different time. But he doesn't give a yes, it can happen in this way, or no, it can't ever happen in this way. He leaves it a little bit open. And so whatever position you fall on to begin with, you're probably going to end up there saying, see, Paul proves my point. But in the middle of that, in the middle of the disagreement about how those function, is overriding, self-defacing love. That's what we're supposed to have. Now, there's a phrase for it. I like self-deprecating humor. I like self-deprecating things. I don't mind making fun of myself. Why? I'm easy to make fun of. I'm odd. I'm strange. I'm eccentric. I'm also thick-skinned. So I don't offend myself when I mock myself. For the most part, you all don't offend me when you mock me. Actually, that's not true. I think every time I've been mocked by somebody of this body, there's been no offense because I just think it's funny. Even if you mean it, I think you don't. That's how I can be thick-skinned. I just assume you're making a joke. You don't really mean it. If you do, that's okay. That's between you and God. I don't need to know. Right? I used to think, and by used to think, I mean until like I was 28, that it was self-defecating humor. I kid you not. It still makes sense, and it still works, but I really thought it was self-defecating humor. So in this sense, not the humor component, but you should be able to be self-deprecating in how you engage with people. Destroying of yourself, putting down of yourself for the value of another person. Okay? That is hard. That's actually impossible. In my brokenness, I cannot do that. Which is honestly why we stand here and we pray at the beginning of the service, God, give us what we need to make this happen, because we can't do it on our own. I don't have the ability to love people like that. Even in the engagement of charismatic gifts, I'm not strong enough. I will get frustrated. I will get irritated. I will decide that I'm going to bend all of my mental abilities, limited as they may be, to bend all of my mental abilities to proving you wrong, which is really proving me right, which is lowering of you, which is raising up of me. That's what we do. In our own power, in our own way, that is what we try to do. We cannot live this way because it's beyond our abilities. Just simply beyond our abilities. My dad told us a story. We were talking about how meat is tender or tough, good or bad. He told us a story he had heard from a friend, at least I think it was a friend. We're going to say it's a friend, about an elk that was seen nearly 10 miles out to sea by a fishing boat or a boat of some sort. And the crew got permission to go try to harness this so they could have fresh meat. So they got this elk, they lifted it up, they killed it. I mean, it was about to die. It was hardly swimming. It's 10 miles out in the ocean. It's almost done. They killed it. They tried to eat it. It was terrible, apparently. That's not the point. The point is the elk had reached a point where it could not survive on its own, right? It couldn't do it. It didn't have the strength. Elk are strong. My dad shot a moose one time, and all I had to do, I was in high school, in the best shape of my life, All I had to do was hold the rack up against the wall while he mounted it. I thought I was going to die. My arms hardly strong enough to hold up a moose rack. Elks are smaller, but here's this giant, strong, capable animal that was way beyond itself. And that's where we find ourselves. No matter how strong you think you are, no matter how capable, no matter how smart, no matter how logical, no matter how spiritual, no matter how whatever, you are not strong enough. I am not strong enough to do this either on my own, specifically though without Christ. So together, Christ allows us to function together to grow, which is part of why we're called to assemble as a body, so that we can build each other up and grow. It's part of the value of it. But even in that, we're not strong enough. We're not. I know that's true about me because I know things about me that you don't know. You know it's true about you because you know things about you that I don't. If we're honest, we know we're not strong enough. So that's just about tongues. That's just about charismatic gifts. That shouldn't even be that hard, but it is. If I can speak in the tongues of men eloquently, well, and I can speak in the tongues of angels, I can speak beyond you, but I don't have love, then what? It's like I'm standing up here just, I was going to hit that with my hand. That would have hurt. Standing up here just banging on stuff. Isaiah was playing the drums, and he's learning, he's doing well. If I were to sit down and play the drums for you, maybe I should for the last song. No, I'm just kidding. But you'd hear what a clanging cymbal sounds like. You'd hear what it's like for a noisy gong. It's an awful cacophony. So if I could be as eloquent and smart as possible, if I can even speak like the angels can, but there's no love in it, then I'm this awful, horrible, sounding, ruining thing. If I have, now even beyond that, if I have prophetic powers. So again, an allusion, a specific allusion to the chapters before and after as he's talking about speaking in tongues and prophecy. If I have prophetic powers, and I can even understand all the mysteries of the world. Okay? There's mysteries going on right now that we can't understand. They're beyond us. There's all over the place stuff, right? If I can understand all the mysteries of the world, I can be the smartest possible one. I can get it all and I'm right every time, but I'm not loving in the midst of it. Then what does it say? It says, even if I have faith, enough faith to move mountains, right? So it's not even just an understanding, right? Here's both sides of it. The logical understanding and the living by faith. If I have all the logical understanding of everything that could possibly be had in the world, or if I have so much faith to move mountains, but I don't have love, then what? So here's both extremes. You're talking faith and logic. Here's both extremes. You're talking the pillars of your church or society in the midst of this. But I don't have love, then what? Then I'm not a pillar. I'm a nothing. An absolute nothing. Not even just a nothing in our church. A nothing everywhere. Because it's only God's economy that counts. You can gain it all here. You can be the best, the highest, the pinnacle, but you lose. If it's not love, it's nothing. That's why this was so convicting to me. That's why it was so hard. I still don't know how to do everything, but I know what's called of me. But Paul's not even done. The Spirit not finished yet. Now, not only have I gained the most, now if I give everything away. Just imagine that. To honor God, to show how great you are, you took all of your finances and just gave it away. You sold your house, donated the proceeds to charity. Yeah, we see this, not that exactly, but we see it. And you know how I know we see it? I hear about people who do this who I don't know. What do I care if you gave all this money to a charity? As soon as you're out trying to tell me that you did it, go back to Matthew chapter 5 or 5 and 6. As soon as you try to do that, it's a waste. But that's a different story. But I find out about these people who donate huge amounts of money. Okay? If you do that and you don't have the type of agape love that God is speaking about here, the kind of love that says, I'm not doing this so that I gain anything. I'm doing this so that you gain as much as you can. I'm doing this so that Christ is honored in everything I do. Then that is worthless. You've gained nothing. You've done all the right things, right? You've shown how wise you are and your ability to speak and communicate. You've shown how smart you are or how much faith you have. You've shown that you are not connected to material things. In fact, you gave it all away. You even let yourself be killed over this. But there wasn't love driving it. There's absolutely no value. All of a sudden, 90% of the things that I do, if I'm being honest, I'm looking at and saying, there was no value in that. I gained nothing. It brought me nothing. Why? Because I'm not doing it out of love. I'm doing it out of a selfishness that's trying to gain for me something. For me, it's going to be different for you. I want to prove to people that I'm right. That's my desire. I like doing that. In Sunday school this morning, somebody said, well, what I was going to say was going to be controversial. I don't want to start a debate. And inside I thought, ooh, let's start a debate. That'd be fun. But what happens is that's typically me saying I want to show my superiority, my ability to outwit my whatever. That's my fleshly tendency. I know it's not right, but that's my natural go-to. So far, we've said if you do all those things but you don't have love, you've gained nothing, you are nothing, you're of no value. So what then? Love is patient and kind. There's 7 sets of things here. And depending on which version of the Bible you read, you'll see the set or you'll not see the set. I learned it in the 1984, 86, whatever it is, NIV. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking. Love is not easily angered. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Right? And it starts with love and all these things, which is great, but you miss the sets. Because if you're more literal with how you translate, it says love is patient and kind. Not love is patient, love is kind. As though it was 2 separate things, love is patient and kind. So there's 7 sets of those. Set 1, love is patient and kind. 2, it does not envy or boast. 3, it is not arrogant or rude. 4, it does not insist on its own way. 5, it is not irritable, resentful. 6, it does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. 7, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. 7 sets. And it culminates with the beginning of the next paragraph, which just says, love never ends. Now we're going to talk about the things that do end. But there's 7 sets in there of things that love is. It is patient and kind. Long-suffering, steadfast. It is also kind. Things that I struggle with. Things that we all struggle with. Love must be patient and kind, or it's not love. Not just patient and resentful, right? If your patience builds up in you bitterness or resent, it's not love. It's not. And that's hard. Because I can be patient, but inside, I'm counting the days until your crazy head starts listening to logic and I'm frustrated. And then it shows. And that's wrong. It doesn't mean the action at the end was wrong. It even means your patience was wrong. Because it wasn't patience from love. It was patience from something else. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. You know where envy shows itself? It's two things. It shows itself in my being envy of what other people possess or can do. Right? Oh, somebody got... I remember a friend of mine one time, he told me he was not wanting me to know that he got a new truck because he didn't know what I was going to say. And I was like, you know what I have to say? Good! I'm thrilled you got this. I don't have one, but that's okay. I don't need one. I mean, honestly, I didn't need one. God had provided for this person in that way. Why should I be unhappy? Right? It's not my job to be judge of that. We are to use all of our possessions to bring him glory. And if you can't use your truck or your house or your car or your chair or whatever it is to bring him glory, then don't have it. That's a different topic. But just because God provides that to you doesn't mean I should be envious. He lets you have it. And that's what I told him. There was no reason to envy for me over that. You know where I do get envious? See, I get envious the other way. Oh, man, to be able to do that, that would be cool. My friends who live in a place where there's snow skiing that actually is like real snow skiing, I find myself envious. Oh, to live in Colorado again. I don't want to live in Colorado. I don't really like Colorado. At least I don't like Denver. The mountains are cool. It's also really expensive to snow ski. Yeah, that's all different stuff. But just that opportunity to enjoy the winter instead of, oh, there's snow. Great, now I have to move it. Now I just have to stay inside until it's warm again. Oh, the wind is blowing 50 miles an hour. Fantastic. This is fun, right? That's what we do in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. Winter is not a thing to be enjoyed. It's a thing to be endured. So I find myself envious of people who can enjoy the winter. I find myself envious of people who can do the things that I don't think that I can do well. That's where I find envy. It's not in possessions, but it's going to be different for all of us. That's just how it affects me. But love doesn't envy. Why? Because it says, hey, you have what I don't. Isn't that great? Isn't it great that you have what I don't? And let me tell you what, even the things that I think that I have that you don't, I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm not going to boast. I'm not going to try to show you that I'm better than you because I have this. Now go back to the friend with the truck, right? What he did great, he wasn't trying to boast to me that he got a truck. Hey, check this out. I got a truck. You didn't. You must be a terrible money manager. You must have gone into the wrong profession. You must, whatever. He wasn't doing that. Love doesn't boast. It doesn't try to show that I'm better than you. It also doesn't say, boy, God gave you something. No, I wish that I had that because God must, you know, not love me enough to let me have it. He must not care about me enough. It's not about that. Love isn't about that at all. It doesn't envy or boast. Love is not irritable, or it's also not rude. Sorry, I missed a whole line. It is not arrogant or rude. It's not self-looking, and it's not trying to put people down. Love doesn't do that. If you find that you do any of these things, even in your heart, even if it's not in what you're saying, but it's in your heart as you're saying it, God knows. And it shows an unwillingness to submit to his spirit, an unwillingness to submit to his son, if that's the case. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be debates over what's right and what's not. Doesn't mean there's not going to be debates over truth. There's going to be, and there should be. But it's a debate that seeks truth. Most of the debates, and we're going to get into this in 2 Timothy, which is where we're going after this week. He talks a lot about silly, irreverent arguments, pointless debates. Debates that aren't about finding the truth that points us to Christ. Debates that are about showing our abilities, our strength, our knowledge, uplifting us instead of uplifting Christ. Those are pointless. So there should be debates trying to find truth, right? There should be. This is healthy and this is good. But it should always be about trying to find truth, not about proving that we're right. I listened to a lot of guys in locker rooms when I used to play basketball. I listen to a lot of people when I go do things. I'm around people in general. I listen to a lot of people when I'm here. I mean, I like to speak too, so don't think that I'm saying I only listen. But I hear a lot of, I really proved my point now. And as soon as you ever think, boy, I really want to prove my point or I did prove my point, you're wrong. Not wrong in the true, not true way. I mean sinful. I'm in a way deeper wrong. And that's including me. If I do that, it's sin. Even if I'm trying, even if I show truth and show that I'm right, it's sin. That's what that whole beginning is about. There's no value. You gain nothing. You are nothing if love doesn't drive what you're doing. So you can find the truth, right? You can understand all mysteries, the depths of the world. But if there's not love, you're sinful and you're sinning. It's not arrogant or rude. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It rejoices with truth. That means, friends, the ends do not justify the means. They don't. Now, how deeply you take that is another conversation. But the ends do not justify the means. To get what you think is best by doing it in an un-Christ-like way, an untruthful way, you're wrong. There's not love there. Our culture is rife with these things. They're all over the place. But if we as Christ's people follow them, we talked in Sunday school this morning about Jesus asked the question, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith? If he finds these things, friends, he's not finding faith. There's no faith in doing what this says love is not. That's not faith. There's faith in doing exactly what it says. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing. It rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love doesn't end when it gets hard. You don't get to say, oh, you know, you're making this difficult for me, so now I'm not going to love anymore. Life is hard. I'm not going to love anymore. It endures. It believes. It hopes. It moves on. It never ends. Prophecies, the spiritual component of chapters 12 and 14, they're going to cease. They're going to go away. As for tongues, they're going to stop. The ability to speak in tongues is what it means. Or going back to the very first part of this chapter, that speaking in the tongues of men, that ability to be eloquent and make your point seen and heard and understood and followed, that influence. God has given certain people the ability to speak in such a way that they cause others to listen to them. That will stop. It's going to go away. As for tongues, they will pass away. As for knowledge, it will pass away. The depths of your ability to know reach their depth. And as Christ moves us beyond that, it ends. Now, there's some specifics about eschatology that's being referred to here. When Christ returns. But there's also a general truth to it. All those things go away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When the full truth is revealed, the half-truths go away. If you know anything about the history of astronomy, then astronomy, astrology, whichever one studies the stars, not the one that has the magic component. Right now, I don't remember. But, say it. Astronomy. Okay. I thought so, but I wanted to make sure I had it right. And now I'm being recorded, so if I do this wrong, then it's really wrong. Anyway, astronomy. If you know anything about the history of astronomy, they used to think that planets, as they revolved around the Earth, they couldn't figure out what path they went in, so they went sort of like this. Made this ellipses and had loops in them, and that's what kept them moving in the... I don't know how they figured that out, right? But that was accepted because it was the only thing that made sense. And then when they actually figured out that the Earth was round and it revolved around the Earth. I am not a flat earther, okay? None of you should be either. But when we figured out that the Earth was revolving around stuff and we weren't the center, then all of these other things made sense and nobody started thinking anymore that planets did this in the sky. Because the partial information that they had passed away when actual truth was understood. When the actual truth of Christ comes in flesh, in returning King of the universe, everything else melts away. I don't mean some things melt away. I mean everything else melts away. Your understanding, your tongues, your ability, your rhetoric, your logic, your possessions. Because when he comes, everything temporary moves away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. Do you know when it's right to speak like a child? Because children do not necessarily speak from love all the time, right? Do you know when it's right to do that? When you're a child, okay? Of which there are one, two, three of you, in four of you in this room, maybe five, maybe six. You're not. I'm not kidding. My 14-year-old son, he doesn't get any more slack on this than I do. He is not a child in that sense. He is a volitional human being who can choose Christ. And at that point, with the Spirit in him, he is required the same things of as I am. Now, I understand he's going to still be learning and struggling, so more latitude is given, but it's not okay. It's still corrected. If my 18-month-old screams at me, I'm going to say, stop. He's not 18 months old anymore, but I will tell him to stop, but I'm not going to say, Noah, that was not loving. You need to be loving, bud, because he doesn't understand it. He's a child, honestly, a child. Most of us in this room, not children. We don't get the right to act like one. Ever. That's exhausting. But you don't ever get the right to do it. When I was a child, I thought like a child, I acted like a child, I reasoned like a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. For now we see in a mirror dimly. We don't have the full picture, but when Christ comes, we will. And now faith, hope, and love abide these three. These three stand as the three things upon which we can function, and the greatest of them is love. It trumps faith. It trumps hope. Because it points to that aspect of God that we can emulate his love for people, which includes at times things that are unsoft. They're difficult, but they're loving. They're the value of the other being over the value of myself. They're the value of you over me. But that also means, friends, it has to be the value of me over you, for you. This has to be a one-way street that goes both ways. One-way street meaning I can only impact how I function to you, the body. But you are equally responsible to have that one-way street running toward everybody else as well. That's really hard. It's really, really hard. Actually, it's impossible. And so as we move forward in 2021, which for all intents and purposes seems worse than 2020, so far anyway, we're what, 17 days in? By 17 days into January of last year, we were all having fun. 17 days in now, more riots. People stormed the Capitol. We're yelling at each other. We're arguing over all sorts of stuff. Seems worse than last year. We're called to love in this year, to be steadfast. To be steadfast as living sacrifices to Jesus. And in doing that, we make ourselves men and women who love. The fruit of the Spirit, love is what? Or the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. Galatians chapter 5, 22 and 23. Each of you should look to your not only to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider the needs of others. Consider them more important than you. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. That's love. And that's what we're supposed to be like. Each one of us vying with each other to show deference to each other. Me trying my best to show deference to you above me. You trying your best to show deference to others above yourself. Us all trying to show that we care about each other more than ourselves. And in the midst of that, you come to this place where you grow together. It doesn't ruin the stew by one person not doing that, but it removes them from the equation. Don't be that person. I must not be that person. Deference to others, love for them over deference to self and love to self. Choose them. Let's pray. God, we stand here convicted, challenged by your word, by your spirit. God, we are a people who fail, who don't love as we're called to, who look for self over others, and we ask that you teach us to not do that, that you convict us of the sin in our lives that does that, that you cause us to be men and women who show you to the world around us. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for loving us when we don't deserve it and when we don't show it. Teach us, Lord, our own limitations and our own failures. Allow us to care more about where we don't look like your son than where others don't look like your son. Show us the majesty of Jesus. Let our eyes be fixed on him. May our hearts be turned to your spirit, and may you be glorified in our lives because we love you, even though we fail. And it's in the matchless, holy, amazing, preeminent name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.